It is Thursday, the 3rd of October, and this is episode 184 of Digital Outbox. Hello, welcome to another episode. I'm Chris, joined by Ian. Hello, Ian.
Good evening, Christopher.
How are we doing?
We're doing fine. I've been off work all this week.
So you should be fully energised and ready to rock.
Apart from Monday and Tuesday when I had to do a bit of work.
But... Oh. So yeah, those holidays, yeah.
Fun. Damn.
Yes. Right, so let's start with the news. Get on with the news, because we have got a pick today, amazingly. So I can say we're going to start with the news, because we can end with picks. There we go. Bulma. Stevie Boy's left Microsoft, as we've been talking about, and a video of his final speech has been released, an exclusive video of his slightly teary, a little bit cringesome, and in fact, a lot cringesome leaving speech. What, were you brought to tears?
No.
No? Did you laugh a little bit?
So. When I read the text about this, because they said it was incredible that he was on stage and it was a big Microsoft get together, and I kind of thought there was like 1,000 people there, but it would look like he was in like the biggest hall in the world.
It was like Coldplay. Everyone had like, you know, little glow sticks.
Yeah. I mean, it was totally like, I mean, if that is their yearly get together, it's like, that is
awesome.
Yeah. And it was what, I mean, it was like 3 massive stages put together, all the products on it. And so I don't particularly like the guy. He's always been a sales guy. He's always been like, you know, he talks rubbish. I don't believe a word he says. But I couldn't doubt his passion, which I always thought was a bit false before. I thought it was all about, you know, a bit of a, I'll just go up and sell this. But clearly he did love that company. Clearly he did. There was a passion there that wasn't false. You know what I mean?
I don't think you can fake that. I think he's not that good an actor. So yeah, I think you're probably right. And you're right. I think people in the company liked him. I think, you know, employees quite liked him for that passion and the stuff. But nevertheless, he's kind of overseen the starting of the death knell maybe of Microsoft, which is a bit sad, really.
Yeah, and
if you love something, you've got to let it go sometimes.
Yes. And I mean, I guess the thing is, the song that he chose to kind of sum up was bad. Well, it was bad for me. I thought it was like, oh, dear.
Anything from Dirty Dancing is not good as a corporate. Anyway, yes, he had the time of his life. But yeah, no, it was, clearly showed passion, but he did leave the kind of same way that he kind of arrived, really, which was whooping and hollering and crying.
pretty much.
You know, I've been watching Breaking Bad, like, really badly watching Breaking Bad, as in I've consumed 3 seasons in a very, very short space of time. And he reminds me of Hank.
And do you know, I've got them all kind of like ready to watch.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And I signed
up for Netflix. So I've got Netflix everywhere now.
Wow.
I might even talk about that later, because it nearly caused me to throw my phone this morning. There we go.
That's not a bad thing for you. Or not an unusual thing.
It means it's coming towards the end of my phone usage, generally speaking.
But I guess, I mean, so as I said, I thought the passion was fine. When I actually watched the video instead of reading the text, it made a bit more sense. But there was this great tweet that somebody put up and just said, and it's an amazing passion, and I guess you'd want to see that in any leader, but Steve Jobs was right. Microsoft has no taste. And I thought,
yeah, I mean, that's fair enough. But then again, Apple are arrogant shit, so, you know, that's fine as well.
Are they?
Yeah, of course they are. Anyone that makes an iOS like they've made, which is, yeah, going more and more up their ass, really. The more I use it, the more I dislike iOS 7.
Really? You know, I'm the opposite.
No.
Because I've gone by the icons and stuff, and I'm just using it, and I'm kind of enjoying using it.
Now, I think there's a whole ton of stuff in there that which isn't user-focused. I think it's completely opposite. I think it's self-indulgent twallop, basically. So there you go. Windows Phone, they're actually making strides into the markets, basically. So they're gaining market share. Although it wasn't immediately obvious where they were gaining their shares, but it seems like it's with still people sort of trailing off of the old sort of standard phones onto smartphones, but also sort of more at the lower end of the market. So they're not necessarily making masses of money, but they're certainly shifting units.
Absolutely. I mean, in the UK, they've now got 12% market share, which I think
creeping.
That's phenomenal. You know, we were very dismissive.
I think we can still afford to be a bit dismissive. There's room for three people in the market, and they've got that third spot.
Yeah, and as you say, the reason why they're at the lower end, although they are selling, is it Lumia 1020? Is that their big kind of camera phone? I think I do see tweets from people saying, you know, it is actually a very usable phone, but with certain kind of flaws, etc. As you're saying, it seems to be this lower end, you know, upgrading from maybe a semi-smartphone to one of the kind of cheaper Windows devices.
Yeah, and you know, they're integrated in, if you're in the Windows arena, if you've got like a Hotmail account or whatever, and you're happy to sign in via that way, then it, you know, it's same as if you're on the Google arena and going into the Android marketplace. It feels like you're welcome and it, all your stuff's there and sort of synced. So yeah, it feels horrible that we talk about these things and having not used it, and that's where my problem is. I've never actually held one. I've seen people using them. I've talked to people about them using, and the people I talk to say they like them. So
yep, and I think that's actually a good point you make, that there are people. It's a bit like probably me in the kind of Mac Apple type, you know, ecosystem. There are people that are just always use Windows, comfortable with it, and want to use, you know, want to have that, you know, sharing data between all the devices. And you know, I know somebody that bought a Surface, and the reason was, although it maybe had its knocks, he loves Windows and it can all works for him.
Yeah, anyway. And it probably makes a lot more sense on that front. But it's yeah, definitely. Anyway, so that's good news for them, isn't it? Really,
it's amazing news.
So Europe and a growing share basically in Europe,
and it's a foothold. It's something to build, because certainly I still think the operating system is behind. And I think Windows 8, I think, is definitely a misstep, but it's obviously something to build on. I don't see enough in Surface, you know, the updates last week that came out to see how that makes a difference.
Look, it's something. It's just not for me. It's not enough yet. You know, there's that tipping point, and they're nowhere near that tipping point. But no. maybe this proves that they, you know, by going after these other markets that not people like you and me, you know, no. The people that we kind of ignore, that's a good thing.
I do think if the on the five bullet points to talk about the best upgrades in the Surface, the third one was that we now sit at two different angles.
Yeah, but then Apple do, you know.
Yeah, they're not that bad. They're not that bad. No, they're not.
Yes, they are. I'm down on Apple at the moment.
Yeah, just you wait.
Yeah, you enjoy your thumb scanner. Ofcom, right.
What a bitch.
Ofcom, so they have pretty much said that we're not going to get 5G networks. So we've only just got 4G, but they're not going to get 5G until 2018. But they are going to do some trials of what they're calling white space trials. So what do they mean by white space trials?
I think this is this is going to be quite controversial, because what they basically announced this week was that yes, 5G is, you know, 2018 at least. But it is going to use a lot of the spectrum that Freeview currently uses. Mm. So they are actually saying they expect 30 to 40% of the UK's population will need new Freeview boxes, Freeview tellies and aerials.
And that's exactly why they're not going to do anything until 2018, because they don't think they can get away with it, basically. No,
and they've also said this has to be industry-led. They're not going to get any support from government. You know, they're looking at the industry to say, you need to fix this if you want to use this, and it's all about getting extra bandwidth, you know. And
I was gonna say, the spectrum is only so wide, and there's already things using up that spectrum, so yes, they've got to become more efficient in all these usages.
And so seemingly there's a couple of tests, one of them being in Glasgow, and they're going to,
of course, everything happens in Glasgow.
It's amazing.
So apparently because it's the place that's least taken up of Wi-Fi or of broadband in general.
It's a broadband, and it's no big surprise. There's certainly city centre wise, it's, you know, Glasgow's fine, but some of the outskirts, it's quite deprived. So it's no big surprise that the take up's not there.
No, and it's going to be sort of wireless coverage as well, isn't it? So it's going to be sort of big. And I see that's the direction we're headed, right? we're not going to necessarily, you'll have your broadband at home, but you'll effectively roam from place to place. And like the mobile network coverage, now we just have Wi-Fi spots that spread.
And
I think we're going to see it.
They were also fairly honest just about, 3G. They're still, I think you've said before when we talked about 4G, you'd like good 3G, never mind 4G. And they were quite honest this week and says 3G is as good as it's going to get. The only way to solve the 3G problem is to get 4G out there.
So let's get everyone on 4G and then we can ignore 3G because it's never going to be covering the areas that it's not covering.
Allegedly, it was the contracts. So the contract stated that 3G only had to have 80% coverage, and that's all the companies are going to be willing to do. But seemingly 4G is committed to 98% coverage.
And when 3G came out, 80% coverage, that probably was a massive figure that actually everyone thought, well, what, you're not going to need any more than that. It's easy with hindsight to say that wasn't enough, but nevertheless, these guys spent an awful lot of money just getting the licenses, let alone actually putting all the technology out there.
That whole 3G auction was really a misstep in many, many ways.
And I think, and because the mobile industry sort of had all those problems, by having to spend all that money, I think they got bitten and they're once bitten, twice shy kind of thing. So there's a delay till 2018 on 5G, but I think that's fine because I think we need to get this 4G. And 4G, if they give us enough data transfer, is fast enough at the moment for what we need to do.
Exactly. And I still think it'd be fast enough for the next 2-3 years.
Yeah, and I think so too. I think we'll be itching to get, 5G ahead of that, but we'll, that's a couple of years away. Don't even worry about that yet. You just stick with your 4G. It's fine. Rail industry, so they've said they're going to roll out super fast broadband across their rail network. So you'll be able to, they're saying get to the point where you can stream videos while on trains.
Yeah. So they're not going to provide you with a seat, but you'll be able to stand up and stream video.
Yeah, and fair enough. Again, you're not going to have enough data to be able to do that. So, but nevertheless, it's a good thing. And it's going to cost them about $1.9 billion, they reckon.
Yeah.
Like I say, what could you do if you had $50 billion to shove into that? Eh? Mm-hmm.
But as we said...
HS2?
Mm-hmm. No, I know. But as we said in the previous one, 2018, a long time away, but this is by 2019, 70% of train passengers. So this is like... 6 years away still.
I think, having said that, when we started our podcast, we would have been amazed by how much more connectivity we've got even now. It kind of sneaks up on you, doesn't it? All the different places that you can get on, the clouds the cloud hotspots that do appear everywhere through all the other, things. I think we've moved on quite a lot, actually.
So
we got super fast broadband. It wasn't that long ago I was bitching about only having like 2 meg, download, so...
We take a lot for granted. I mean, it's like when any phone comes out now, it's like what takes 10% or 15% off a rating is very trivial stuff now when you look at the devices we've got. You're right.
We're going to create, the UK government is going to create a new cyber defence force. And this is going to be reserves who have been employed in through whatever their skills are out in their everyday life. But they're going to not only be defensive, but they're going to be offensive. They're going to attack people through the internet.
Do you know, I read this and it was probably the day after I watched the last IT Crowd. And I just thought, I can just see lots of mossies sitting there going, yes, I'm in the cyber defense force. Don't threaten me. I will take you down.
What I'm interested in is who are they going to attack? If someone brings attack on you through the internet, they're normally covered their traces and stuff. So what are you going to do? Attack spotty 17-year-olds?
So do you fancy being a reservist on the UK Cyber Defence Force?
I don't have a clue. You need to be clever. I'm not clever.
Yeah, come on.
I'm not clever enough. Having said that, I did watch Horizon not that long ago, all about the Stuxnet and what that actual virus was. Do you remember it was this one that they thought had been written by a government, and actually turns out that America never denied it, but that's probably to their advantage. But that basically went out, and I didn't realize how sophisticated it was. It went out, it spread itself around looking for a particular control unit that was only used in nuclear refinement of uranium, and basically it recorded the systems operating normally, and then in the movies where they stop a video and it, like a security camera, and you play back a bit of a looped security camera to hide what's actually going on. They did that with data, and then they basically set their centrifuges to explode, and apparently in around about five or six different refineries went down.
Yes. Amazing. I'm just looking up just now. Actually, the Wired had a great article. I can't believe it was actually 2 years ago.
Yeah, I know, it's mad.
But if you just search for Wired and Stuxnet, there's a post from 2011.
Are you trying to say that my explanation wasn't good enough?
No, it just if you want, I'm maybe a richer picture of what.
But that, I mean, that was a great example of what they're talking about by this offensive capability.
But in the article, what put in my head was what brought it back was exactly what you were saying. It was just the fact when the researchers were looking at it, they were like, "What the hell is this targeting?" Because usually it targets, you know, some sort of, you know, part of the operating system or some sort of part of. And they couldn't figure it out, and then eventually they found it was this, you know, controller.
Well, it was a weird opera. I was going to say it's a weird language written in. It wasn't C or anything.
But that's when they stumbled on it was this controller unit. Then they started doing almost like talking to engineers, mechanical engineers about.
It's like the serial numbers and stuff. It's amazing. Yeah. It was an interesting series. But anyway,
so the article actually takes you through all this stuff, and it was great.
And the biggest problem they've got now is that because this thing is still out in the wild and they can't control it anymore, it can come back and infect them. So they've got to be careful of themselves. Amazing. But anyway, that's what they mean by, you know, offensive. And I think that's why they've realized that offensively they can actually go and attack something and somebody without actually leaving their computer. Great. Wonderful.
The only bit I was surprised that it was was the reservist, but it always
felt it's not a full time.
Dad's army-ish.
Yes. Go Moss. Security flaws. So for a while now, companies have been offering bounties based on if you can get a provable non-previously discovered flaw in a website, you can often get some money if you point it out to the company who runs that website. And Yahoo give you some money as well.
Yep. So Google, I think Google is at 10 grand or 5 grand.
Yeah, I think it sort of changes and depends on the severity. But
On severity, depends on the application. And you know, when you found it. So Yahoo, they were doing the same thing and they were giving out $12.50. So,
security firm, High Tech Bridge, they went round and they basically reported one and they had a reply back saying, actually, it's been pointed out before, but thanks. Then they pointed out two more that hadn't been discovered before and they were offered $12.50 each. So they decided it wasn't really worth helping Yahoo.
No, which is no great surprise because some of the security flaws, I'm sure the time and effort to go and research this isn't, you know, 20 minutes worth of work. You know,
now, having said that, they did say within the first 40 minutes they had found the first flaw.
Yes.
I mean, you can just try, you know, normal security flaws. But anyway, yes, $12.50 doesn't really incentivize you doing that.
And of course, that went round the kind of, you know, blogospheres and Twitterverse this week and everybody went, ha, 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 ha. But just before we came on tonight, Yahoo actually put a post in saying, we've actually been trying to put together a bug bounty program for a while. And they've called this T-shirt Gate. Just because this is obviously exposed, you know, how maybe amateurish the approach we're taking in comparison with the Googles, Apple, Microsofts of the world. And they're getting serious now. The rewards are up to $15,000. I think they kind of start at least 150 and they've started to range up to $1,500 for the discoveries. So
therefore it's worth it now.
It's also retrospective. So it's going back to 1st of July this year.
And they didn't have to do that.
No, I didn't have to do that. But I think that's just,
stop the bitching.
There is a change at that company. And also the article was pretty good. They were talked to the kind of head of security and he was actually just doing T-shirts. He was buying T-shirts off his own back as a kind of thank you because the company weren't doing anything. So he, out of his own pocket, would go and buy like a Yahoo T-shirt and send it on to people discovering flaws because he was like a little bit embarrassed that they didn't have an official policy. This is just another sign. Yahoo, over the last year since Marissa Myers come in, whether you like her or not, she has changed that company. You know,
The negative press has stopped, so we don't have so many stories coming in absolutely. About the negativity. Things like Flickr improved. They changed things around a bit, and generally speaking, the news they're not flailing around somewhere now. Something feels like it's happening, and the noises you get sound like the noises you'd expect to get, kind of thing.
Bought loads of companies, released lots of good mobile apps. Traffic, you know, share has gone up, which
things
a lot
moved,
of people
basically.
Which a lot and it's moving in a different direction. And they're also talking about how the recruitment's, you know, really it's a place people want to be again. Whereas it was for the last maybe 2-3 years a place that anybody with talent was leaving and saying, don't worry about Yahoo.
Drowning. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Right, the FBI, they've seized some bitcoins. They've seized virtual money from the Silk Road founder. Now, Silk Road is a, well, the best way of describing it is an eBay if you want some illicit substances.
Pretty much. I'm just trying to remember, what was the name of that? Drug Wars. That was it, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know. What's that?
Years ago, in the, was it the Palm Pilot or something that first came out? It was Drug Wars I used to play. It is. And it used to be this kind of thing where you would go, yeah, there it is there. You used to go, like, you were a drug dealer in New York, and you would, there was different markets, and you would buy, you'd buy like heroin and like in the east side, and you would sell it in the north side because there's a shortage here, and there was always a risk that your police might catch you. And this is, and Silk Road just sounds like a bit more sophisticated version of Drug Wars.
Effectively, it was putting buyers in touch with sellers, and that's what it was doing, really. I mean, that was its whole thing. It was all obviously anonymized via the, what they're calling a seriously sophisticated anonymizing software called Tor, which pretty much anyone can use.
Well, you couldn't, anybody can use, but you couldn't see the website. You couldn't just type Silk Road and go to the website.
No, so you had to be aware of it. So anyway, so anonymous through Tor, and also using bitcoins. Bitcoins have proved to be fairly anonymous in, or nearly untraceable, and it's used across a lot of places. But basically, they have managed to, I don't know quite whether it's all been proved, but they've managed to get enough for a warrant for seizure. And they say they've seized the website and the contents of the Bitcoin wallet, which could range up to about $3.6 million.
And similarly, the guy, once they actually started investigating this guy, who is Ross William Ulbricht, I don't know if that's the right pronunciation.
Ulbricht, I think.
Yeah, maybe, which is now just makes me think Die Hard. But how my mind works.
Maybe the t-shirt I'm wearing. No, shut up, Chris.
What?
I don't know.
What's your t-shirt got to do with Die Hard? Yeah. You need to tell me now.
Move on.
Oh, okay. I'm not going to cut that out. That's class. But seemingly they were like, they found like Google Plus postings and LinkedIn postings from the last couple of years that kind of started giving the game away.
Well, you say that, but it was just that it, you know,
no, but
put a video on a playlist. That's rubbish. That's not, I mean, if they're using that as evidence, that's
No, they're not. No, they've got the guy banged to rights. There's a lot, that the story that I've copied into our show notes, there's a lot more detailed ones out there that shows you the kind of path to catching this guy. And then a day later, they also, because seemingly he was taking a hit out on somebody and hired a gunman to take a hit out. So he is a bit of a crook. And also there was a
understatement, yeah.
There's a really good interview with the guy's, because he rented a flat with somebody. And the seemingly his roommate had no idea that this was what the guy was doing.
Wow.
So almost like he's running a bit of a double life. And I saw a tweet today saying they will make a movie out of this.
Yeah.
And it will be.
No. Yeah, okay. So anyway, so that they're pretty proud of the fact that they've done the seizure, and they reckon they've also got the ability to seize wallets of the Bitcoin's wallets of people who have transacted with this account.
Which is,
again, whether they can or not, I don't know.
And it's taking so Bitcoin has its own exchange rate, doesn't it? And it's taken a hit today. So I think one Bitcoin dropped, I think it was like $20 or $30. You know, wow, almost a straight. So it was, I think it was up at about, was it about 180, 200, and it dropped $20, $30. And it just with people going, is Bitcoin really popular just because it's funding a lot of illegal activity? Like, duh.
Well, it is, but again, it's like everything. There's good reason to have a Bitcoin ability. But obviously people use those things for different ends, don't they?
Yep. And some of the more savvy commentators are just making they're almost trying to draw parallels with shutting down a pirate site. Shut down one, another three will pop up, because people just see it as there's a gap in the market and there's money to be made. We'll fill that market.
And obviously this was based in the US, and that's partly why they could go and storm these things. Whereas, you know, as soon as you move outside the US, they're stuffed. So
America.
Yeah.
No, better not.
Yeah. Right, let's go on to Samsung, because I know you're going to have some fun. Right, so Galaxy Note 3, one of their phablets, so massive 5.7-inch smartphone.
But it's like the size of you. That's how big it is.
What do you do when you have got a smartphone the size of me, but you want to be operating it one-handed? Well, you do a swipe gesture, and then it shrinks everything down so you can operate it one-handed.
It's just, words fail me. This reminds me of like, you're giving me that look that you think this is a good feature.
I don't think it's something that bad.
I just think it's awful. What's the point? This is like the Galaxy S4, which is like all these features, but we know it's so complex. We'll give you an easy mode.
Yeah, no, I mean, and that was we talked about that at the time, and we said it was just going too far down that route.
And this to me is another example. The Galaxy Note 3 has actually got good reviews, apart from its shady adjustments with the benchmarks. But it's actually got good reviews, but it just feels like it's another let's make it that slightly bit bigger, just so we can just so we can see it's new. That thing,
a bit
that
like
thing.
Having a thumbprint scanner.
No, but I...
Then all these jokers will buy it again.
But this is the thing you constantly criticise Apple for. And Samsung are doing it. Not only that, they're doing it by saying, actually, yeah, this doesn't really work. So let's shrink all the software down as well.
Now they come up to a solution to having a big phone, which is obviously what people like, and then having a one-arm operation. Anyway, this is a feature that I feel like I have to defend them because I know that you're going to attack. So it's a hidden away feature. It's not like it's front and center. It's only there if you want it.
It's just made me laugh out loud. It was just like, God sakes.
But you see, if Apple would do some sort of massive, like, white background thing, you know, saying how, you know, we wanted this bigger phone, but how do we have a bigger phone and still use it with one hand? Well,
anyway.
We've got the shrink mode. Yeah, anyway. Right. Benchmarking, this is more the point we're going to get onto. And inflating benchmarking scores. So obviously when new phones come out, people shove them through, online benchmarkers, whether that be JavaScript benchmarking, process speed, all sort of thing, graphic display and stuff like that. And it basically, I think it was Ars Technica that did some research on it, basically.
They caught Samsung earlier this year with the S4 saying that the kind of when they switched the benchmarking software on, it's like, that doesn't look right. And it's the same again. They've caught them with the Galaxy Note 3.
And they're basically saying, if you line it up against another Android device that has exactly the same processor on board, basically it seems to outperform. And then they discovered by digging in a bit that actually it put itself into a high CPU mode. So whenever it sort of discovered that you were trying to do a benchmark, which then inflates the scores and makes them, you know, look better by X amount.
Bizarrely, like 5%, 10%.
Yeah, not tons better, but just a little bit.
But I think, unfortunately, in this, you know, there's very little new. If you look at all the kind of phones coming out, and everybody does go crazy with benchmarks and say, oh, I am like 1.5 times better.
Well, when people want to get reviews out in about 2 milliseconds, which seems to be the way online at the moment, the first thing they do is just run benchmarking to see how it compares, and then that's the first thing that pops up in it.
And to be fair to Ars Technica, they usually are late with their reviews compared to, you know, don't have like...
Well, probably because they do some proper research like this.
They do. They're one of the few. So I'd actually... Again, just totally sleazy. Just to me, that sums up Samsung. There's no shame in that company, and I'm not even talking about the patents that came out yesterday that the legal team shared with their executives. It's just the stuff that they do as a company. It just thinks they're scum. Anyway,
why do you take exception to it? Why not? They can do whatever they like.
I just think it's a kind of immoral way. See, if I was running a business, I wouldn't be doing this.
But what about Apple? And the inflated signal thing, you know, we found a bug in our software which showed you had many more bars of signal than actually you had, you know, this unfortunate bug which made it look
So the bit I don't get about tonight is anything that's Samsung, you're just like, I'll just find you an Apple story.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
But I don't know, I just hear a lot of slagging over Samsung. I don't see why.
Well,
they're not the only ones doing it, are they?
No, so that was a follow-up. So the next day, an Antech actually put out saying that they'd started doing this research back in July, and basically it was every Android manufacturer have been doing it.
Yeah.
The only manufacturers that have not been doing it are Apple.
But how do you know that they Motorola. Don't develop their actual chips in line, you know, to do that?
So at the moment...
am I digging away a bit here?
No, it's just getting a bit silly, to be honest. At the moment, the guys that have got all the knowledge are basically saying... You know what I mean? That it's basically all the Android manufacturer.
Yeah, so they're all doing it, basically.
What can I say? If you want to say that Apple are doing something different, crack on.
Like Lance Armstrong in the Peloton, they're all doing it.
Well, I don't think they are all doing it, are they? That's the important thing that came out of this. They're not all doing it.
Yeah, anyway, so but it's good that it's come to light. And like you know, I've said that this all happened on PC. You know, all these benchmarking
things
all started kicking off and all that kind of testing software that PC manufacturers got wise to it and suddenly...
Pointless.
Yeah, it is all pointless. Don't look at benchmarking. Use, you know, everyday use and just see whether you get what you want out of it. And to be fair, that is what Apple say all the time. You know, don't listen to... We don't give you all our figures because you don't need to know them. All you need to know is that when you use it day to day, it feels good.
Pretty much. And because the other thing as well is the bit I hate about reviews, see when people start playing around with graphs to say, like, look how much better we are because it's got a bigger gap. But then you realise it's like the 0 to 80 has changed and
they've moved the zero point.
Yeah. And it's like, it's just all a bit pointless.
Lies, damn lies and statistics.
Anyway, sleazy Samsung.
Yeah. So they've been caught out, basically.
Yeah.
Good for Ars Technica. Judge has tossed out Apple's motion. So this, we're going to talk a lot about this Lodsys. Now, we've talked before about Lodsys. Lodsys are a patent troll, I think it's fair to say. And basically, they keep chasing after iOS developers and Android developers saying that you're using our patents. And basically, we'll take you to court unless you give us a handy license fee of about $5,000. $5,000 is deliberately set because it's cheaper than actually paying a lawyer to defend you in court. And basically, they keep going around to all these people. And Apple obviously saw this as a threat to their, you know, their ecosystem and their microtransactions and things like that. And they decided they would try and defend their developers on their behalf. And I think Google's also trying to defend their developers on their behalf. But the problem with this was, and as happened, Apple are a third party to this, the actual defense they're trying to raise. And all Lodsys, when it went to the court, Lodsys basically evaporated all the existing cases by saying, right, we just set that of court and we've done, we've gone now. Those cases don't exist. And therefore Apple's motion to the court was irrelevant because all the cases had disappeared.
Yes. And I'm just, as you were talking, I was kind of like, when was this? And it was 2 years ago because it was before.
They've been around a long time.
It was just before WWDC that a lot of the iOS developers 2 years ago had got these legal threats. And Apple was taking the view, we have licensed this from you on behalf
Apple
of our developers.
I was going to say, they thought they had a license which would cover their developers, but then apparently not.
So this get tossed out by this judge.
Texas judge.
Yeah, this came out just at the end of last month. And the bit that was bizarre about this, and I kind of copied in the last paragraph, Apple may be able to intervene in another one of the Texas cases, although it seems likely... Seems like there's nothing to stop Lodsys from using the same settle and dismiss strategy it did here, since it has clearly found a judge willing to stick his head in the sand with regards to the broader issue. Lodsys can be sure it will continue to draw Judge Gilstrap as long as it files its cases in Marshall, Texas. The other judge who considers patent cases filed there is U.S. District Judge Leonard Davis. But since Judge Davis' son William Bo Davis is Lodsys' lawyer, the company's cases will all be redirected to Gilstrap. And it just... That just sums up patent laws to me. That they just run away to this like middle of nowhere Texas place. They've obviously got a judge who is like, yep, I agree with you. I'll just keep on going down that line. There's only one judge till he dies, basically.
Yeah.
That's the way it's going to be. So I actually thought, because it was about 4 weeks ago, a couple of iOS developers, I've just got a Lodsys letter. I don't want to see any more, but they're back chasing for their five, ten grand or whatever. That. As you say, that really nasty, for a small developer, it's a lot of money. And for the big developers, it's nothing. And that's why some of them are paying it out. They're just saying, whatever, go away. This is more money.
Yeah, because Lodsys laud that and they say, look, we've got these big developers who are signing up and agreeing with us that, like, we have got a patent. It has to be said that patent has hit the news in America, and they're trying to figure out a way around this. I mean, even, you know, Obama's been talking about it something that needs to be solved.
Yeah, they wanted to change it and stuff, but I think they've got bigger issues at the moment.
They've got bigger issues at the moment, but nevertheless, you know, it did hit. It's at least on their radar, which is a good thing, because, you know, as people have said, it feels very much like extortion.
I did also see that this kind of everybody not working, but the kind of government side of things not working in America is actually going to stop some phones coming out, because the FCC have to vet the phone before it's released. And seemingly some of the new Google phones haven't been through that process yet. And the FCC is currently shut down.
So there is going to be a direct technology output on that, yeah.
Damn you. Anyway, there are lots of stuff. Let's do these two very quickly.
Yeah, keep on listening, because there's about three of these stories.
What I didn't realise, and this came out a couple of days later, Kaspersky Labs. Yeah. So they're the big kind of security antivirus labs. Lodz has tried to sue them. And Kaspersky was like, not in your life. We're taking you to court.
They came with their normal letter of, you will pay us for a license, or you will have to cease and desist using. Yeah, and Kaspersky said, no, we're never giving you money, and we are going to take you to court.
Yep.
And what did they do? What did Lodzis do?
They ran.
Ran away and hid.
which is fantastic. And I mean, it was a great, because Kaspersky's view, patent trolls are no better than extortionists who cropped up in Russia after the fall of the Soviet Union when crime ran rampant. And you kind of thought, is he get some personal experience that he's just like, because he was, you know, is he get something from his past? It's like, no, I'm not having anybody doing this to me. Even though the lawyers cost, you know, it was far more money to go route. And that's what you've pointed out at the start. So yeah, Lodz has run away now, and as soon as I read that, I was like, surely that tells a story for developers out there. Just fight it.
But then, like, say, have they got the money to do it?
Exactly. And the second person, and she's actually been in the tech news quite a bit this week, Martha Stewart, who is like a cook from America, or like one of these home living type.
Yes, so she probably exists on their home living channels all the time.
Yeah.
But she's gone a step further. She's not just reacting to them suing her. She is actually suing them. So this case cannot go away.
No.
Because if she chooses to pursue it into the court, then they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to appear.
Yep, absolutely.
So this is taking another step on, basically. So it's not just, say, reacting to them and chasing them away. It's actually they've got to come and you know, be in the spotlight, as it were.
And also, I mean, that article was on GigaOM also confirmed that, you know, Google and Apple are lining up to try and defeat this because it is harming their developer community.
Yes, and like I say, because they're third parties to it, they can't call a case themselves, but they can put weight behind cases that have already been called.
Yeah.
Whether that be money or whatever.
And bless her, Martha Stewart's other problem this week was that she dropped her iPad and she couldn't figure out why Apple just couldn't send another one because Steve Jobs gave her this iPad. So Apple marketing were like, shut up. go and either buy one or come and see us.
Shut Martha. Gaming. Let's talk briefly about GTA because it's been 2 weeks since the launch of GTA and we've been having great fun playing the story mode. Then online got launched. How are you finding online?
Frustrating.
Yeah, so basically it's broken. It just doesn't work. I guess with however many units they sold, you just can't get onto the online, basically.
No. And
which is a real shame and very frustrating.
And some people have, so they sold.
You have to be persistent and very patient.
And lucky.
Yeah, and lucky.
So, I mean, basically, I created my character, tried to get in, and then just was hit with this bloody city background and sitting there for 15 minutes and then just starting to do it again and again and again. And people have been saying things like, and even Rockstar said, people have had luck by deleting the game update and redownloading and giving you another shot. Maybe that's worth trying. It's like, Rockstar, that's a bit
sounds
rubbish.
Like they're going to have to patch something, don't it?
Yeah, and the thing I've had most joy doing is deleting the character. So not your save game for the individual. If you go into online, there's an online, so if you press start, go into online, there's different character slots. So obviously as you play the game more and more, you can have four or five different characters. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I did was create a new character, and that actually had more success trying to get in. But it seems to try the first time, and if it fails that first time, it goes into this perpetual loading and just sits there.
Yeah, and once you're at that stage, there's nothing you can do but go back to the dashboard. So it's pretty horrible.
So I'll go back to the dashboard, fire up the game, delete the character, and I seem to have a chance of getting in there. But I can see it two or three people today, so I thought, I'm off. I'll try it in a quiet time, you know, like 10:30, 11. There's no kids around and all that kind of stuff. Mm. I can see a couple of our friends on the friends list doing the exact same because they were constantly rebooting.
And it's just not worth it, basically. No. It's just broken, and something needs to happen to get that solved. I guess people will just give up over time, and therefore the situation, excuse me, would be made better.
It's a shame, and you were right about the single player. The missions are fantastic. Yeah, so we spoke after, was it last week's podcast?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
It must have been, and you were saying, you know, stick with it, don't give up. It is really good. You know, when you do the first heist, it's like really cleverly done. Yeah. Trevor is just fantastic. His first few missions are just great. And it just opens up. The world is massive, and it's just, there's so much to do.
I think I'm 45% through the game or something like that, and most of that is through the main storyline. So I've not done that many side missions or anything like that. So I'm pushing on through. I just go straight for the main story, items. And it's not let up yet. You know, it's all been quick paced, good story all the way, and you never feel lost, which I say I felt lost before in GTA games before. So no, it's great, and it's still good. And say the amount of tie-ins with HBO is brilliant. I love it.
I think even just swapping between those three characters is really well done. The kind of different missions you get and interplay and the different stories that happen and just the way you drop in.
And in all the different scenarios that you drop in on.
It is really well done. I'm only 20%, so I've still got lots to do.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Okay, so that is the end of news, but that you've got a pick for us. And it's a pick that I can't remember whether it's because you posted it up before, but I've seen this and I wanted it and I've forgotten what it was called. So it's great that it's a pick. And the pick is
The Great Suspender, which is the best name ever for an Apple extension. And I actually, it was middle of last week I saw it, I think. So it was like Next Web or one of the sites had initially posted it up. So what this is, it's an extension for Chrome. And I guess I fall into a bad habit of having hundreds of tabs open. And some of the tabs, if you look at Chrome, I mean, if I go and look at the, you know, how much memory it's using up, it's burning lots.
It's basically having different tabs. Unless you go and look at the processes, it's hard to understand. But it can be 5-10 megabytes per tab, if not massively more, depending on what, you know, if you're on a really heavy site.
Some of the, like, your Google Pluses and Facebooks that are constantly polling and all doing all that kind of stuff is big. So all this is really quite simple. It sets up your toolbar, and if you're on a site, so I can go into Facebook right now and I can unload it, park it, and suspend the tab. So it reduces the memory footprint. And on a desktop, so yeah, you're saving a bit of memory. But if you've got a big beefy desktop, so what? But on a laptop, what a difference. You know, battery life's much improved. You're using far less CPU. It's running cooler. So I've really been impressed with this, and your tab's still there. It's not like the tab disappears. It just looks slightly, you know, dimmed out. And I've been using it for a week, and it's great. And the only thing I thought was, I've really just turned the tab into a bookmark.
Yeah, but then that's fair enough. I mean, because they're the most commonly used bookmarks, which are even more, local. And it's the way it's, you know, suspends and then comes back in, you know, into play again. It's just more convenient. It's more natural. It's kind of the things that mobile phones do anyway. They do suspend things that are in the background. So it's just bringing that front and center on the desktop, which can be important. So, you know,
it's just as the week. I'm using it on desktop as well. I'm using it in both. I just thought I really should just be a bit more disciplined and save as a bookmark.
Yeah. We talked, I think it was either last week or the week before, about podcasting apps. And I said I hadn't really got any podcast apps for my Android and stopped me using it. So it kind of kicked me into action, and I did download a couple. I downloaded Dogcasts, and I also downloaded Pocket Casts. This is on my Android. And I have to say, I've stuck with Pocket Casts, and I found it really very good and useful. It did everything I wanted to. It was easy to find things, sync and everything. We have heard from our listener, Jim, and he said that actually he was using Pocket Casts, but on iOS it's got some bugs and nastiness in it that's made it a bit awkward to use. So he's gone to using Downcast as his podcasting app, and he says he rates it quite highly.
So Pocket Casts I love on Android, because when I first got a Nexus, I was kind of struggling. I was like, oh, it's all a bit... And then Pocket Cast came out and it was like, that is fantastic. And I kind of wish, at the time I thought, I really should move away from iTunes. And I never did. It was only when that update came out 2 or 3 weeks ago and messed everything up. I was like, sod this. I don't need this pain. And I moved over. And I really got it. I actually put a blog post up this morning. A very rare blog post appeared on Digital Outbox. dusted it down, wrote a blog post.
Creaked around the edges.
Yeah. And yeah, so Jim sent us that mail. And I think that maybe one of the reasons that he's moved from Pocket Cast is that Downcast has a Mac client. And I think we talked about this last week.
Yeah, there's nothing that really does everything everywhere, which is the problem.
You'd want all three, you know. Yeah. And I guess maybe we're a bit more rare that we've got iOS, a Mac, and Android kicking around that we'd want to keep in sync. So it's make a choice.
He also said he's seen the Tesco huddle, and I also saw that in my local Tesco, which I was quite surprised about. It's not a big Tesco's, but it's pushing the huddle quite heavily. You know, it's got displays as you walk through the door, and it's got no other technology in this store. It's just a food store.
All right, that's interesting.
And out by the customer service, they've got their huddles there, so they're clearly going to push it everywhere.
Yeah,
so they are behind it.
And it got good reviews. I mean, PC Pro video that I watched this morning. For 120 quid, they're saying it's like it just needed a bit more CPU. They showed you FIFA 14 running, it was a bit jerky, but then it's 100 quid.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and to be honest, you know, whoever buys that probably not buying it for 50, maybe they are, but I don't know. You know, I doubt it. You have lower expectations if you're only spending that much money on a device, and fair enough too. And like I said, I think I mentioned earlier, I am now subscribed to Netflix. I think I talked a while back that they didn't really have anything that I wanted, but I don't think Netflix push front end everything they have really. So, and I've been absolutely hammering Breaking Bad. So that's been really good across all my devices. So I've watched it on iPad and I've watched it on Android.
So have they got all five series of Breaking Bad?
That's why I did it. So I'm on a month free at the moment. So I'm getting through them as quick as I can.
Interesting. I might do the same.
And what nearly caused me to throw my phone in the... I was watching an episode of Breaking Bad at the gym this morning. I don't know if iPhones got this, but in the Android, if you plug in your headphones, it automatically stops you from increasing your volume more than halfway without accepting a warning to say you may damage your hearing if you increase your volume anymore, which is very annoying because halfway is extremely quiet on my headset. And the Netflix app on the Android had not, basically would never ping up the alert to say, you know, you've got to accept.
Oh, so you can press it?
No, and actually it worse than that. It crashed the application. So I was sat in the gym wanting to throw my phone because all I want to do is finish off the last bit of this episode of Breaking Bad. And it just kept crashing. Anyway, so I was on the on the bicycle, reading around the internet, doing searches,
getting quite annoyed.
And no one had come up with a solution. But actually, the solution that I ended up coming up with was I used Pocket Casts as an app to increase the volume past halfway. It came up with a warning. I clicked OK, and then I went back into Netflix. And because I'd already accepted the warning on that in this session, I guess it let me increase up to full volume, and I got to finish off just. It took me, I needed to watch the last 5 minutes of Breaking Bad, and it took me all of the half hours on the bike for to get that last 5 minutes. And the phone nearly went.
That's good value, but.
There you go. So Netflix, I'm loving it. Who knew?
Who knew? And so you can watch that anywhere because it's on Xbox and PS3 and everywhere.
So I've been hammering it through on Xbox most of the time. Then if I need an episode just before bed, I might watch it on the iPad. And then when I'm down the gym, I'll watch it on the phone.
That's really good.
That's my life.
No, but that's what I did with the exercise bike. I ended up watching, you know, TV and podcasts.
That's why I can get through three seasons in extremely short space of time. There we go. That's the end of the podcast.
Well, I was going to say you get voted off a Bake Off this week. So you've not got that anymore.
You're not the only one to say that.
He is like a fat version of you.
I'm glad you're saying, I even think he's a little bit fatter than me.
he's massively fatter. Well, he's about half a stone heavier. But he's... the best bit is he smiles like you as well. Even when he starts, like, when he was talking to, what is the baker called?
Mary.
Silverback. No.
Him.
Him. And he was talking to him.
Hollywood. Paul.
Hollywood. Yeah. He kind of tilts his head and it's like the same little manner. Dude, you're doing it now. It's the same. You have a
doppelganger. If you want to find out more about us, you can do digitaloutbox.com. Talk to us. Email info@digitaloutbox.com. Twitter and Skype. Digital Outbox. Box. I'm on Twitter as CheesyUK, and academyracer.co.uk is my racing blog. Where can we find you?
My blog is iand.net, and I'm on Twitter as Shweepa.
Perfect. Thanks for listening this far, and we'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Cheers, Glenn. Bye. You've been beating since you're are you same age, 37.
I'm not that old.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were.
No, I'm a mere pup.
Honestly, I'm looking at his picture and it's you. It's just class.
Developer. I mean, my beard skills aren't good, actually.
No, you basically need to be rubbish at baking as well.
Check.
Must be true if I'm not the only one saying it.
No, Bomb and his wife.
There you go. Men with taste, I've told you.
Said that, yeah, exactly the same.
Tell you, that's kept me going through this series, seeing you in it every week. Don't know what I'm going to do anymore. It's all just like stupid girly women now.
Yeah.
Like Ruby was saying, oh, this is rubbish and I had no time to practice. Another one going, oh, this is more style than substance. Oh, I've come up with a really creative, it's piano keys. Oh.
She was good last week, though.
Yeah, so was her buck teeth.
Yeah.